I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Now, we live in a world that values extroverts, people who are outgoing and outspoken and even outlandish at times. Society tells us that confidence means standing up and speaking up. But for introverts, that's just not their style. Kate James is a Melbourne-based speaker, author, and self-professed introvert, and she's calling on other introverts to stop trying to be fake extroverts and instead embrace the satisfaction of authenticity. Her book is called Quietly Confident, An Introvert's Guide to Knowing and Expressing Your Worth. And Kate James joins us now. Hi.
Hi, Jesse.
Hey, thanks so much for waiting there. So we had some technical challenges at our end. There's more to being an extrovert, isn't there, than just being outwardly confident, and introverts are more than just a bit shy. Can you take us through the characteristics of each?
Yeah, well, extroverts are typically the kind of people who are probably more comfortable to have the focus on them, but more importantly, they get their energy from being around people, and more than introverts, they get their energy from being around groups of people. Introverts, on the other hand, are good socially, so unlike what many people think, they still love being in the company of people, and they're usually great at building lasting relationships. But they might feel drained after being in, you know, in a big crowd, or even, you know, doing sort of one-to-one social interactions if it's been sort of for a longer period of time. So it's really where we get our energy from that is the biggest sort of emphasis, I think, the biggest difference between the two.
Is the world getting louder? And if so, what is that like for an introvert like you?
Well, my world's not getting louder, but I live out of town, so I'm pretty lucky. I have lots
yeah.
of time in nature. But I think generally speaking, the world can be louder, particularly if we spend a lot of time on social media. And I don't know about you, but I think that even the media in general has changed. You know, some of the programs we see on television are a little bit more confronting for introverted types who are often also a little more sensitive to things like violence. And, you know, the fact that we're exposed to the news 24 hours a day, or we can be, that can feel louder for an introvert, and it can be something that feels, you know, quite unsettling.
Yeah, that's interesting, and it's an aspect that I haven't heard before. Can you tell me a bit about that and how that fits into the basic definition of an introvert as being someone who gets their energy in a different way than an extrovert?
Not all introverts are sensitive, but yeah. it's something that they're a little more inclined to. So they can be sensitive to noisy environments, to bright lights, to, you know, things like violence on the news. But having said that, I wrote my book mainly with introverts in mind, and a few extroverted friends have read it, and they've said that those things, you know, things particularly about sensitivity, resonate for them as well. So that's not as clearly defined. You know, it's not only yeah. introverts who feel that sensitivity. That can be an extrovert trait as well.
What's the split between extroverts and introverts in, let's say, in Western society?
When I did my research, there were varying different statistics. A lot of the research comes out of the people who started the Myers-Briggs, the MBTI, and they their most recent research, I think, put it at around 40% introversion, which is a lot higher than what people anticipated. But some other stats say, you know, 30%. So we think that probably between 30 and 50%, it could be as high as 50%, which there have been reports that it's a 50-50 split.
And is there a pressure or a compulsion for introverts to be more like extroverts in the world we live in? Are they encouraged to change their nature to fit in or to succeed?
Yeah, Susan Cain wrote a book she's an author in the States, and she wrote a book, I think it was almost a decade ago, called Quiet, which I initially read and found really interesting. She includes a lot of research in that about introversion. And she claims that there is something in the States in particular called the extroverted ideal, which is around the fact that organisations or, you know, companies and universities will often hire extroverts as leaders. So that has felt then to introverts like we have to subscribe to those those extrovert qualities in order to get ahead in the world, or, you know, sometimes even to get into prestigious universities. You know, at Harvard, for example, there were a really high number of extroverts in the business courses. So, you know, and in leadership roles, in fact, in a lot of CEO positions, much more of the leaning towards extroverts. So I think in answer to your question, we have felt like we've got to subscribe to those ideals. But my sense is, and I started researching this book over COVID, and my sense is that possibly during COVID, when people started to work from home, or, you know, were able to sort of spend a bit more time on their own, they probably began to realise that there are great strengths in introversion. And maybe those who felt more inclined to introversion were more comfortable to express those strengths, you know, rather than feeling that they had to hide them.
Interesting. By the way, is this a gendered issue as well? Are there more consequences for women who are introverts than for men?
I didn't find any research that said that, but I tell you what I did find that was interesting. I was researching confidence, and I found heaps of articles that were helpful for women building confidence and a lot less for men. And I work mostly with women, but I do work with some men. And it made me realise that there probably is a greater pressure on men, in the sense that it's, you know, it appeared in my research anyway to be almost an expectation that men would have less of an issue with confidence and, you know, less of an issue with the things that I was researching than women would. But I think that that inherently means that it's a bigger pressure for a man. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see, you know, what the stats are on that.
You write that many introverted children are being helped, quote, helped by adults who encourage them to behave differently from how they feel. So does that start quite young, that pressure to be extroverted or to act extroverted?
Yeah, I interviewed a psychologist whose little boy is an extrovert, and she was talking about, you know, how comfortable he was to stand up in front of the class, and what she observed, you know, putting her psychologist hat on, was the little kids who were less confident and less willing to stand up in front of class were being nudged along a little bit by the teachers. And, you know, that sense then straight away that there's possibly something wrong, you know, feeling like there's something wrong with them because it doesn't come naturally to them, was an observation that she made. And I know I've got a daughter who's an extrovert and a daughter who's an introvert, and I think, you know, probably generally speaking, there were certain times when the world was an easier place for my extroverted daughter because she was comfortable with those things.
Where does confidence fit into this conversation?
I was curious to, I focused on the lens of confidence for introverts because it's who I work with, but I was curious to know what it meant to have to find, I suppose, or develop a sense of what I called quiet confidence, which is why the book's called Quietly Confident, that was a bit more humble and a little less sort of outward facing, more an internal sense that, you know, you could find that within, even if you weren't the extroverted type or the person who wanted to draw the most attention to them. And I began by looking at the fact that I have a complicated relationship with the word confidence. It wasn't something that I ever really kind of aspired to as a trait that I wanted. Yet I watched some of my sort of more humble clients who were very confident, and I thought that's a really alluring kind of confidence, which was what got me thinking, you know, what is it that gets somebody to that point? And there was a piece of research that really stood out for me, which is called the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah, that's come up in the conversation a bit. But, yeah, spell that one out for people who haven't come across it before.
It's so fascinating. It basically says, I'm going to really simplify this, but it basically says there are two groups of people. One group who are not necessarily very competent in certain areas or not necessarily very intelligent or socially aware, who have no sense that they're not that competent, who have really high confidence. And on the other side of the equation, we have people who are very competent, who are very intelligent or very socially aware, who doubt themselves, who have a lot lower confidence. And this strange sort of inversion that was happening, it really stood out for me because it expressed what most of my clients are, which are the people on the side with the lower confidence but great competence. And the reason, the research has found, the reason for this conflict is that the people who have low confidence know that there's a lot that they don't know, where the people on the other side just really didn't have a sense of how much they didn't know. So they overrated all of their qualities. And we can all think about people who have been like that, who we've interacted with.
I'm speaking to Kate James, a Melbourne-based speaker, author and introvert. Her book is called Quietly Confident, an Introvert's Guide to Knowing and Expressing Your Worth. Do people with confidence tend in our society to fall into that extrovert category?
I don't know that that's entirely true. I think that that's what we think, but what we're seeing more and more is that, I mean, maybe because the conversation around introversion has, it began, and, you know, I credit Susan Cain with a lot of that actually, because her book sold over 4 million copies worldwide, and she suddenly normalised introversion in a way that it hadn't been normalised before. I actually think that we have more quietly confident or more introverted leaders. And my hope is, you know, in writing books like this and supporting leaders to feel confident, even if they don't fit that extroverted ideal, is that we will have, you know, more leaders who are introverts because of the qualities that they bring to leadership that are slightly different to extroverts. So one of the things that I didn't say earlier is extroverts, not all, but many extroverts are more comfortable with that kind of competitive, less collaborative style of leadership, and or more telling rather than, you know, conversing and reaching a point of consensus. There's a softer style of leadership, I think, with many introverts. And that really interests me. And I'm also interested in, you know, again, because it's something that I work with clients, in this idea of sort of doing work that feels meaningful and, you know, really being open to kind of all sides of the conversation. And I don't know if you read in the book, but I have a long history of teaching mindfulness. And the philosophy of mindfulness really played into a lot of these ideas, because some of that, a lot of people don't know this about mindfulness, but some of it is actually about being with paradox, you know, with these conflicting kind of ideas, that we can be strong and soft at the same time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and you give some great examples of introverts you've worked with. Can you tell us a bit about Caroline, the successful financial consultant who did feel a bit of imposter syndrome?
Look, you know, there are so many case studies that I've included in the book that I can't remember exactly what the outcome was for her, but I think that you're talking about the fact that she needed to lean into her strengths in meetings, and this strengths area is an area that I talk about a lot, where when we're feeling like we have a sense of imposter syndrome, recognising that in fact we only feel like an imposter when we've made it to a certain point of, you know, achievement or success. We don't feel like an imposter when we're in an entry-level position. And we need to remember what our innate strengths are and lean into those, you know, really try to bring those to life more and forget about comparing ourselves to other people, because often imposter is that idea that there's somebody else who's better suited to this role. But it's fascinating how many female leaders in particular experience imposter syndrome. I think the statistic on that was up around 70%.
Yeah, gosh. And will you say in the book that it's actually quite useful to recognise that it's a common issue? It's not just you. Identify your strengths, as you say. Challenge your negative self-talk. It's all quite helpful stuff. And tell me about embracing a growth mindset. That's actually something they talk about at my child's school, but it's useful for adults as well.
Yeah, this is the work of Carol Dweck, who's a researcher in the States. Again, a lot of this research comes out of the States. They do a lot of this work over there. So we have, with Carol Dweck, the way that she defines it, we've got two types of mindset, growth and fixed. And fixed mindset is where we're basically, we have the belief that we have set traits, you know, certain characteristics or skills or strengths, and those are fixed for life, that we're not going to change. You know, fundamentally, we are who we are. And, you know, there might be some of that that is true, but growth mindset, on the other hand, says that there's always the possibility of growth. There's always the possibility of continued learning. And the bit in between fixed growth set and between fixed and growth mindset is that there's an area where we're always going to be uncomfortable if we're trying to grow. So if you're trying to learn something new, you know, I remember the first time I did a Sudoku, for example.
Yeah.
I felt like it really made my brain hurt. And Carol describes that really well. She's like, you're actually building new neural pathways. You know, if it's making your brain hurt, you're learning something. And the key to getting into growth mindset is allowing yourself to take on the challenge, even if it feels uncomfortable, or allowing yourself to do something new, even if you feel like you're not good at it. And rather than saying, I can't do it, or I don't know how to do it with a full stop at the end, you say, I don't know how to do that yet.
Yeah.
And so we're always trying to challenge ourselves. And I know, you know, I'm about to turn 60, and in my own life, it's the stuff that I push myself to do that actually gives me the most feedback about, you know, how I'm able to keep growing. It's not the things that come easily. You know, when we do something that's really hard and we master it in some way, even if we don't perfect it, that is enormously helpful for our sense of confidence.
And by the way, one thing that you point out doesn't help with imposter syndrome, and that's becoming more successful. In fact, it sometimes makes it worse. So the book the book is called Quietly Confident, and perhaps can we finish? Would you help us to define quiet confidence?
Yeah, I used a whole lot of words to describe it. I think at the very kind of core of it, it's quite humble, it's generous, it's inclusive. There's a kindness to quiet confidence. It's not about saying I'm the only person in the room with an opinion or, the knowledge. It is drawing on the wisdom of the rest of the group, but it also holds within it a sense of presence, which is where I think the mindfulness really comes in, and also self-compassion, you know, allowing yourself to be imperfect and moving forward anyway.
You mentioned trust as being quite key, trusting in ourselves,
yes.
And connecting with our true self and the trust that we have in that self.
The word confidence actually has its roots in the Latin word that means to trust or to do things with trust, a sense of trust in yourself. So trust is absolutely key. And I sort of expanded on that by saying, you know, we need to trust that within each of us we do have a part of ourselves that is confident. You know, you might think about how you are with your, you know, your nearest and dearest friends or family, or even just how you are with your pet. You know, there's a part of us that knows how to be confident, and if we can kind of call on that and move forward with that or lead with that sometimes and just build on that, that, you know, that's enormously helpful. But it does require also really getting to know yourself well, so learning about what your values are, what your strengths are, what gives your life a sense of meaning. Those things are all areas that I address in the book as well.
And just to note, interestingly, you found examples of quiet confidence in the Indigenous cultures of Australia and New Zealand, in fact, in First Nations cultures around the world.
Yeah, one of the things that I found really beautiful as I started to explore that idea of confidence was that it included the collective. And there, you know, in Indigenous cultures and in different cultures, as you say, around the world, there was that sense of feeling connected with something bigger than yourself, which can really inspire confidence and, you know, connection with stories, with the land, you know, that it's almost that sort of spiritual sense without being religious. But yeah, that certainly inspired confidence in people.
Love that. Thank you very much for your time today, and congratulations on this book. Very thoughtful and rich topic. Kate James, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
The book is called Quietly Confident, An Introvert's Guide to Knowing and Expressing Your Worth.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.